Hey guys, self-employed people, this one's for you. If you're self-employed or you're thinking about being self-employed, I am about to show you how we will calculate your income from an underwriting perspective to secure conventional or full income documentation loans, which will provide for the best rates and terms. Okay, so let's get into this. I'm going to dive right in. There's lots of different schedules within a federal tax return. Okay, we're not interested in a state tax return. All I need is the federal tax return. We'll spend most of the next 10 or 15 minutes, however long it takes, diving into Schedule C, a little bit of Schedule E, not much, maybe a little Schedule D, but then also your 1065 corporate returns, K-1s, 1120s, and that sort of thing. I'm going to start with the Schedule B, however. That's going to be your interest and dividend income. We need a two-year history of this. And within that two-year history, we need to see where the asset or where the income is coming from, aka your Charles Schwab account or something to that effect. The asset must be in our borrower's name. So, for example, if you show dividend income from an asset account that you're claiming and it's in your spouse's name, and that spouse will not be on the loan with you, we cannot give you that credit for income. We also need to show that the asset can provide for a 36-month continuance. So the asset statements themselves, let's say, for example, the two-year average that we got from Schedule B said that the income would be $1,000 a month. Okay. The asset statement itself must show that there is $36,000 left or remaining in that asset in order for us to give it to you as well. So, two-year history on the Schedule B has to be your account, and then the asset itself will be required. And I need to see that it will have a 36-month continuance of income. Okay, let's move into the Schedule C. This is our sole proprietor. There will not be a W-2 on this unless you have a W-2 job and you're self-employed. And I'm looking at my notes here too. We have products too that are going to require a little bit nuance or difference here. I'll try and touch on those. The all-in-one in particular is a lot more restrictive. If you guys are, if those that have heard me speak about that first lien HELOC, the all-in-one, you know that the underwrite of it is brain damage ensues. Okay, so for anybody that's interested in that, it's well worth it. But just know that some of the rules I'm going over now will probably have extra layers or hair to them if you're looking at getting an all-in-one. So, a sole proprietor Schedule C, we will look for a 24-month history. We need 2 years worth of this income to be able to give you any. So, if you just started self-employed and you only have 1 year of a tax return with that kind of income, you will not be eligible to utilize any of it. We need a 24-month history minimum, and we will generally take a 24-month average unless we can prove that you have a 5 year history of being self-employed. And it doesn't have to necessarily be that self-employed job. Same line of work will be important. But if I can show 5 years that you have been self-employed in that line of work, then I'm allowed to take the most recent year filed in a 12-month average. And that might be to your advantage. If we were to take, let's say, 22 and 23, and 22 was a little bit lower than 23, the 24-month average is not going to be to your advantage. If you have 5 years of being self-employed in this way, that allows me to take a 12-month average of the 23-year, which in my example said it was higher. So if I divide a higher amount by only 12 months, that's going to give you more income and more buying power. So just FYI on that. Also on the Schedule C, if the most recent year filed is in decline, if it's more than 20% less than the prior year, I cannot give you any income for those returns less than 5 years. Okay, so kind of going back to my last statement, if you have that 5 years, then I can just give you that most recent year. If you don't, and I look at the last 2 years, and the most recent year has declined in income, adjusted gross income, 20% or more, then you do not get any of that income, zero of it. Okay. If it is less than 20% in declining, then we would take the most recent year 12-month average. That will also be a more conservative, right? Versus giving you 24-month average if the prior year was higher. and the most recent year is in decline by less than 20%, a 24-month average, adding those two together would give you higher income. So if it's less than 20% decline from the prior year, I can give it to you, but it will then revert to the 12-month of that year. So it's a more conservative number. That number will be lower. Hopefully, you guys are tracking some of this. I know I'm kind of going fast. Okay, add backs. Now, here's where I think if anybody's got a pad and pen here, this is where you want to take some notes. Okay. The add backs on a Schedule C will be depreciation. Okay, depletion. So for those of you that are self-employed and have looked at a Schedule C, go get your Schedule C and look on that first page. You'll see there are line items for depreciation, depletion. Depletion doesn't happen very often. Depletion is pretty rare. It's when a business would be, let's say, a commodity-driven business. Think gas station. Sometimes we'll see it there. Otherwise, we really don't see depletion very often. Amortization and casualty loss, mileage, which this year, 2024, is going to be 0.28, so 28 cents per mile. So you guys can do the math. If you had, 100 miles that you claimed, 28 cents is going to be $28, right? You'll have $28 in add backs, and an add back is to your advantage. I probably should have prefaced that. So an add back is something within the self-employed or the Schedule C schedule. So within that part of your tax return, there are certain expenses that you're going to claim. Obviously, you're going to try and claim as much as possible. The goal, especially for being self-employed, is going to be to mitigate as much as we can in what we have to pay back out in taxes. So those deductions, where you can find them and legitimately claim them, great. The following that some of which I just went over, are ones that will not hurt your bottom line. We get to add those back to the income. So in that adjusted gross space, right? You've got your adjusted gross. I can give you back things like depreciation, casualty, amortization, mileage, business use of home is another one. Deductions that are no add backs, for example, things like meals and entertainment, you cannot take those as an add back. Okay. And that's just the basic of Schedule C. That one's pretty easy. Schedule D, I'm just going to kind of go through some of these in order. Schedule D, capital gains is what we're looking at for that. We have to have a 2-year history of that income as well in order to utilize it, and it has to be in the individual borrower's name. Buying and selling stock, for example, and that the asset is still available, that would be an example of what a Schedule D would be, and the asset has to be in your name, my borrower's name. Schedule E, and that's Schedule D. We don't see a ton of that usually, but it's as simple as just defining those few bullet points. Schedule E, I'm not going to go into that because we have other things, other videos and things that I've gone over where we really dive into the Schedule E because there's a lot of extra nuance. Maybe I'll do another one, and or maybe we'll do schedule a live Q&A with me where I'll pull up a redacted Schedule E, a real life Schedule E, and show you guys the worksheet that we use and how the pluses and minuses work for that. It's a lot of really good information. And for those of you that have not done it with me one-on-one, or you've not watched me do a Schedule E calculation from an underwriting perspective, that one is important. So be on the lookout for that. Maybe we'll do another one of those soon. So yeah, make sure you join us for that or watch it after the fact. Let's move into our 1065 corporate returns there. We're going to have K1s, okay? When you see a K1 as part of that corporate return, box one of the K1 document will show our gain or our loss. I have to hit you for the positive or the negative, the gain or the loss there. 100% of that is what's going to be how it's going to be calculated in your income. If rental properties are shown there, it'll be in box two. Again, the gain or the loss I must take. The 8825 form. Now, this gets a little bit complicated. I won't go too far down the rabbit hole, okay? But on a corporate return, the 8825 is the equivalency to the personal Schedule E. The form will be done after all the other deductions on the return have been done. The reason for this is that if the depreciation on the partnership, and that's going to be line 16, is not reflecting any depreciation, we can look at the 8825 and depreciate and add that back too. So let me say that another way. If the K1 box two, where if there are rental properties included, shows a loss, for example, I'm going to then go into the 1065 return and find the page that is an 8825. Again, that's the equivalency on a corporate return of what the personal Schedule E is. The depreciation on the 8825 can then be added back if I show a loss, or let's say it's a small gain, I might be able to increase the gain. That depreciation is always going to be a paper loss, regardless of the different schedule that we're talking about, and it'll work to our advantage. One note on that topic is that, you know, when you do your cost seg, for those of you that are into that already, those can usually be pretty big numbers. It can make a huge difference in what the gain or loss would be, really either increasing significantly the gain or really mitigating any loss that we may find within these calculations. Okay, if there's a line four, I'm still on the K-1. If there's line four, if that exists, those are guaranteed payments to partners. You can take that too. You're going to have to, just like pretty much everything else, you're going to have that 2-year history. So I don't see those as often, but if you have it, great. I need a 2-year history of it. Let's move into the adjustment. I've got notes here. So let's move into adjustment to cash flow and the income of that. So adjustment to cash flow is really just going to be income that we can give you. So on the, again, 1065, I'm still in the 1065 return. On page 1, line 4, this is ordinary income, positive or negative. Line 7 would be non-reoccurring income. If that is a loss or an add back, the income will be deducted. Okay. So let me say that. Let me just say that another way. Line 7, non-reoccurring income. So this is something that you're not going to be getting very often. If it is a positive number, okay, I'm sorry, if it's a negative number, if it's a loss, it can be an add back because it's non-reoccurring. If it's a positive number, it'll be deducted from the income. Okay. But if we determine a non-reoccurring, and if it's recurring, we really just ignore it, right? We don't give it to you. We just take it out. You don't get to have it if it's recurring, and it wouldn't be there if it was non anyway. Add backs are the same kind of as what we went over before. We've got depreciation, depletion, not common. You've got your amortization and your casualty. The other deductions that you can have on this are going to be things like mortgage notes. Sometimes for those of you that have other debts that you're paying or being paid through the corporation, it'll say mortgage notes, bonds, and payable less than 1 year. We would have to deduct that from your income unless we can get a CPA letter stating that it will be an expense that's rolled over. So another example of that, or a further example of that, is going to be a line of credit, right? So due and payable, if it says due and payable one year, then that will be a deduction of your income. However, if I can get that CPA letter saying it will roll over and it will continue, then it will not come off the income. Okay, what's next? Let's go into, so that was the 1065 and the K-1s. Okay, let's get into the 1120s. I'm not going to spend a ton of time on this one for a variety of reasons, but just trust me, it's more of a one-on-one thing and how you're filing, and that should be done between us and a real-life example scenario situation. 1120S, okay? All the same rules apply basically as the 1065 that we've already gone over. You will not see, the only other thing about that I would mention is that you're not going to see any guaranteed partnership or partner payments to the partners on an S-Corp. Otherwise, what I just went over on the 1065 and that K-1 is relatively the same as the 1120S. The 1120C, in fact, I think that for the C, it doesn't even say C, it just says 1120. 99% of these are just the shareholder gains and losses. When we see an 1120C, I rarely ever get these. These don't even report on your personal return. The only time we ever see them is if you're trying to use the income from that source. As usual, we need a 2-year history. But like I said, the C is going to be really just your portion of the shares gain or loss that would come about. If it's a loss, then you're obviously not going to give it to me. If it's a gain and you're trying to use it for income, that's when we may see that. And a 2-year history is going to be required. So guys, that is a kind of a quick 101 crash course of self-employed income calculation from an underwriting perspective, largely having to do with Fannie Freddie or FHA or anything for even primary residence. guidelines, more of an agency conventional type loan. If you have questions, we want to hear from you. Please email us at info@ridgelendinggroup.com. You can call us always 855-74-RIDGE. Is that easy way to remember? I will set up another one of these. Maybe we'll do a live one for the Schedule E, since that's such a prominent focus on what we do here, right, with us investors and how we want to maximize the deduction without it adversely affecting our debt to income ratio, right? There are very specific rules. So if you have not yet seen any of my videos on that, or you just want a refresher course, I'll make sure that that's on tap for us soon in the next couple of weeks, month-ish. And yeah, thank you for listening. We're here on standby if you guys need anything. And I hope this intel was useful. See you soon.